Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome to episode 351 with my return guest, Greg Barrett. I'm Paul Gilmartin. This is the Mental Illness Happy Hour, a place for honesty about all the battles in our heads, from medically diagnosed conditions, past traumas, and sexual dysfunction to everyday compulsive negative thinking. This show's not meant to be a substitute, for mental counseling. I'm not a therapist. It's not a doctor's office. It's more like a waiting room that doesn't suck. The website for this show is metalpod.com. Metalpod is also the Twitter and Instagram handle that you can follow. Don't forget PodFest. LA PodFest is this weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And I'll be a part of Murray Valeriano's podcast, Road Stories, on Friday night. And then I'll be recording a live episode of this podcast on Sunday afternoon with my guest Andy Kindler. And then I'm doing a couple of panels and stuff like that. But if you're going to be in the LA area, go check out PodFest. It's downtown Friday, Saturday, Sunday. For more info, go to lapodfest.com. And if you live in the Twin Cities, I am coming there Saturday, October 14th to do an afternoon recording of the podcast at Sisyphus Brewery, and then be part of a comedy show that night at the same place. And I'm looking forward to it. A lot of shit in the news this week. I'm always torn when something tragic happens, like it happened in Las Vegas this week, because one of the things that irks me about our discussions around mental health is we wait until something really awful happens, and then there's a flurry of conversations about it, but nothing concrete is done. And meanwhile, the media just pumps out sentimentality porn. Not that there shouldn't be victims or grieving, not that there shouldn't be an outpouring of sympathy for the victims and the families of victims, but it shouldn't be the bulk of the reporting. We should be getting underneath, how is this happening so often in our country? And you cannot take mental health out of the equation. And I'm not saying that some of the people that have wrought this terror wouldn't do it if we threw every possible attempt to help them mentally, but at least we'd be trying, and I know we would be reducing violence in this country, but we don't teach kids or parents how to deal with their emotions. A lot of people don't even understand that there are no bad thoughts or feelings. You think and you feel what you feel. There's just healthy or unhealthy ways of expressing them. And that was something that didn't even dawn on me until I was in my 30s. Why we're not teaching that at the youngest level, I don't know. But I'm going to get off my soapbox. And I laughed at a phone robot this week. It made my fucking day. I was on the AT&T, I was checking my bill through AT&T on my phone, and it asked for my account number, and I gave it, the robot, my account number, and it said, "Terrific." We have gotten to the point where machines are now insincere. I've always been annoyed by corporations being dishonest and condescending, but when they take it to a level that is so extreme, it makes me laugh. I'm no longer angry, and it makes me giddy. I think because when I'm condescended to mildly, I never catch it. And I just automatically feel stupid. But when it's so obvious, it fills me with happiness. And one other thought I wanted to share with you is I was trying to describe how journaling has helped me and why it's better than and different than just sitting and thinking about what it is that you're going through. Or to do in addition to that. And the way that I think I can explain it is, I used to think that journaling was just writing down shit that I already knew. But as I began to journal, I realized that journaling is a way of uncovering the details and the breadth of something you already knew and the things that are underneath what you think you already knew the totality of. So to me, thinking about an issue or a situation, the thoughts go by so fast and they're so generalized in my brain. It's like a bullet train going by at 200 miles an hour and trying to make sense of what's inside the train. Journaling for me is like the train is parked, I walk inside the train and I meet the passengers on the train, and it's a huge difference. And it has allowed me to link cause and effect on things in my life. It has allowed me to understand when I've made too big of a deal of something or I've minimized something. There's a power in slowing things down. I think that's my point. Anyway, I want to tell you about our sponsor, BetterHelp.com. If you have never tried online counseling, I'm a fan of it. I love my counselor. Her name is Donna. I've been with her for about a year. And when I say with her, we live together. It's a very special relationship. She's been my counselor for about a year, and she helps me a lot. We're currently working on shame as a central issue in my life. But if you want to try BetterHelp.com, go to BetterHelp.com/mental, complete a questionnaire, and they'll match you up with a BetterHelp.com counselor, and then you can experience a free week of counseling to see if online counseling is right for you. And you got to be over 18 years of age, and I highly, highly recommend it. All right, I'm going to read a couple of surveys, and then we'll get to the interview with Greg. This was Struggle in a Sentence, and this was filled out by Magic Megan. And about her depression, she writes, "An overwhelming emptiness and sadness that seeps into every thought I have." About her ADD, "Trying so hard to focus on something like a conversation or homework and seeing the most fascinating big red ball bouncing around that I can't help but think and talk about it." About her anxiety, "Feeling overwhelmed with life and the need to fight this monster that never reveals its face." about having borderline personality disorder. She writes, never knowing what feeling is accurate for a situation because there is always so many present and persistent feelings clouding my mind. Thank you for that, Megan. This one was filled out by Levi, and he writes about his anxiety. Anxiety is knowing you're a monster, but not when you'll transform. Another one for anxiety is, it's like being naked at a friend's house and not knowing how to turn the fucking shower on all the time. Depersonalization for him is like turning into an octopus halfway through a marathon. And then a snapshot from Levi's life. He writes, I started dissociating so hard the other day that I thought, since I'm not in my body, I can never die. Thank you for that. That is awesome. This one was filled out by Cuban Rubin, and he struggles with depression and anxiety and OCD. And a snapshot from his life, he writes, after the birth of my first daughter, I was hopelessly depressed. I learned that there is documented evidence of postpartum depression in men, and that is apparently what I suffered from. Nothing made sense anymore. I was supposed to be happy and in love with this beautiful little creature my wife and I created together, but instead I was a sad, irritable sack of shit. After several weeks of suffering, my wife bravely told me that I needed help and that she wanted her husband back. I bawled my eyes out, made an appointment with a psychiatrist and started on some meds, and ultimately got better. My wife may never know how truly grateful I am to her for literally saving my life, as I believe I would be dead if she hadn't encouraged me to get help. Thank you for sharing that, Ruben, and I'm so glad your wife spoke up as well. And my ex-wife did me a great favor by nudging me 17 years ago to go seek help, and she didn't shame me for it. She did it very gently, and I knew she was right, and I'm so glad that was the beginning of a new life for me. And then finally, this is from same survey filled out by a woman who calls herself Smiling Through Shame, and about experiencing racial or cultural bias. She writes, being black in my city, the city of Portland, is like being the mole on Marilyn Monroe.
I'm so scared of being alive and so scared of dying.
I was so, so lonely, but I couldn't bear being around people, and it hurt.
I've just been, like, very interested in dicks.
I don't know how to let loose and just be.
All my alters have different handwriting and different...
Extremely anxious.
Affects.
I am most turned on when I am in fear.
My first thought was I'm about to die.
Stomach-clutching despair.
Ocean of sadness.
I came out over the phone to them.
I put myself on the Atkins diet in fourth grade.
They told me I was wrong.
The secrecy is what kills us.
And I just sat there and cried on his shoulder.
And it was the first time I ever felt safe, like a weight lifted off of me.
In order to get rid of your anger, you have to learn how to cry.
I started liking myself for the first time.
I'm afraid that people are only nice to me because they're afraid I'll kill myself if they're not.
Oh, that's fantastic. That is fantastic. Greg Barrett and I are here in my very tiny bedroom. Now, should we call this?
It's a tiny bedroom, but it's a big bed.
It is a big bed. It's a queen size bed. Should we call this episode Paul and Greg in Bed?
Yep.
For those of you that aren't familiar with Greg, which would be 99.9% of the population, why do I come out swinging?
I know. I also think you were too fair with that. That was too kind. That is.
Yeah, that's right. Because that would probably be like a million people that would.
Yeah,
you know, I would
take 1% of the population. I could easily live off a solid base of 1% of the population.
Greg wrote the book. He's just not that into you. Co-wrote it. Right.
I co-wrote the book. He's just not that into you. Right. Now, they're up to speed on what books are, right?
Not really.
Okay. So paper was invented. Yeah.
Greg and I have been friends for
for a while.
Yeah.
We kind of drift in and out of each other's lives, but you're the first person that I ever did the fear and love off with. You've been on the podcast twice before.
Yeah.
And, I've just been feeling like I want to do an episode that is, has more humor in it.
Yeah,
has
sure. More. Sure. Sure, sure, sure.
And the kind of the wake up call for that was you said to me the other day, we were having breakfast or something, and you said, yeah, you know, I was listening to the episode and I don't remember how you put it, but like, I wanted to make sure you were okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I
had listened to the podcast in the past, but I just had recently, I kind of wanted to, I needed to hear what you talk about on your show. I wanted to hear people in crisis and people with problems or things they wanted to talk about or get off their chest or things that they had gotten over. Like, I just needed to hear some of that. But then I realized, like, you are hearing that graciously. Like, that's all being downloaded into you. And, you know, I hear your monologues at the beginning and then, you know, that's one of my favorite parts. And then I'm like, well, he seems to be eating more ice cream. And I'm going to check in because that feels like maybe he needs to have a lot, you know, that's a lot to take in, especially because you are not a trained therapist. So, you know, and you don't pretend to be, but you are dealing with a lot of people's, you have a lot of empathy. You're putting your heart out there. You're really giving people your love and when you give them the go sign, they're like, oh, I'm coming. Here I come. Here's what I got. Hang on. There's more bags in the car. Dad. Oh, wait till we get to leather. Like, it's a beautiful thing. It really is. It's a beautiful thing. But I just thought, oh man, we should get together and have, I want to make sure people are chatting to you about bullshit. Like, about nothing, asking you about what your favorite shows are. Like, I want to hear about some of that nice superficial stuff. You know, tell me about chairs, buddy. Tell me about your woodwork. Let's talk about that.
I'm so glad to have somebody like you in my life, because when we get together, I laugh so much. I have so much fun. I laugh more with you than I think I do with just about anybody else.
Yeah, and it's a rare thing. Like, there aren't that many. Same here. And I think that is not to be taken for granted. If there's someone in your life that makes you laugh or makes you feel funny or you know, fucking, make sure you put that time in too, because that just doesn't happen. There are people that are fun to be with or interesting or, you know, but laughing is, I think it's more unreal. Laughter is more uncommon than we think. You know, there's a difference between being amused or having a chuckle, you know, than like going, oh my God, dude,
my stomach hurts. Yeah.
Yeah. And only you're going to say that weird thing that I, you know, but yeah, but I also found that the podcast was super helpful for, you know, like sometimes, you know, I like to not hear about my problems.
Yeah.
You know, so like in hearing that somebody, you know, that's what most of your listenership is like, oh yeah, me too. Yeah. But that, you know, I was thinking about your show too. Like,
how's the coffee, by the way?
It's good.
Yeah?
Yeah, solid.
Good.
It's interesting to me because I can only imagine, like, to tell people that you like this show or that you really connected with this show, somebody might go, which episode? You know, because you're talking about stuff that not everyone can talk about. And when somebody connects with the show, it's because, oh my God, my secret or my thing. Right. And then they're like, but if I tell people I like it, they're my, you know what I mean? Like, it's not everybody's some people, I bet, come here to just quietly hear their thing.
Yeah. Which shows do you like? I love every episode about childhood sexual abuse.
Yeah. That, right, exactly. Oh my God, when he gets into, so there's this thing where I like to be touched with a feather duster, but my mom used to masturbate me, see, and okay, like, but somebody has to talk about it, and it can't just, like, I think it not just being in therapy, where you don't know that this is a thing that, like, like, it's just like anything else, like any fetish. It's like anything that you like, that you find out somebody likes. It can be a show. It's just that thing where you go, okay, good, I'm not alone.
Yeah.
Right? Or
and be, just because you're, like, I find those topics to be compelling.
Oh, my God,
but
yeah.
It feels weird to use the word like.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Well, because, right. And also we always are afraid of how we're being perceived, and we don't know what we're going to say if we say something like that. But to be
and
able to...
And deep down, we all know we're dirty.
No, we're filthy.
Filthy
we're
is a better word.
We're just trying to be good animals. Like, we always are trying to be better than... We're like, we're so high... Like, if we just reduce it, yeah. You're an animal that has feelings. That's it. But you're still an animal. You know, if we all really were like, I mean, if we could sniff butt, I'm just saying we could sniff butts and not, it wouldn't be a problem. Like, I feel like,
we're just really clean animals.
100%. And I'm sure God went, that was a mistake. Putting brain, like, I thought maybe if they had feelings or ideas or they could ponder their own existence, they'd be okay. And I really should have stopped at the dog. Because I kind of got it with the dog. You know, they need people, but they, you know, but they're in packs. Like, but
I should have given the dogs the thumbs.
I should have given dogs the thumbs. Fuck yeah.
Well, he tried with the dew claw.
What is that?
That's the little toe halfway up the leg.
Oh, yeah. Is that for?
Yeah, that's not for knitting.
It's so, yeah.
He started
man.
To give him a thumb and then he bailed.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
And he thought, I don't want it to look like I bailed, so I'm going to give it a nail. I'm going to give it a really curly nail.
That's amazing. There's design flaws in all of them, guys. I mean, you got to take a real quick look. But, yeah, some of them have handles they don't need. Udders was dumb. You know what I mean? I tell you, I wish I put the penises on the inside of people. That would have been better. They just come out. You know, but they stay inside. You just better put my pants so much easier for everybody. Well, wear the same pants.
Let's do some. What do you want to do first? Let's do fears first.
Yeah. Okay.
And then we'll do loves. And we don't have anything written down, so we're just going to be
winging it.
I am moving shortly. And I am afraid that I'm not going to, that there's going to be some big surprise that I haven't anticipated. And I'm going to be like, oh my God, I'm trapped here.
Oh, when you get to your place.
As much as I love the apartment building I'm living in right now that has cliched signs all around. One of the ones I was telling Greg they have is a sign, I kid you not, that says, don't hate the player. Who puts that on your apartment building?
Who didn't know that wasn't going to travel? Like, who thought this is forever?
Their first one used the word the bomb, and then somebody had to say, no, that actually didn't even make it to this century. And they probably settled on don't hate the player.
The guy whose idea that was has all of his CDs and he is not letting them go. They're coming back. I'm going to hang on to my CD player. It's going to be 2002 very soon again.
And essentially what you're saying too with that slow, like that's the one you choose. The slow, it, basically what it's saying is, yeah, I cheat.
I cheat.
Yeah. That's just how it is.
That's how it is.
I'm a liar.
I'm a liar. That would actually be, I would love to see that, like those kind of slogans. You know what I mean? Like just written up there.
Like negative self-belief slogans?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm half of all the things I want. What? I'm not good enough to be good enough. What? There you go. That one's for you.
I don't deserve this elevator.
What I see in the mirror is not only right, times it by two.
is not only right.
It's right. What I see in the mirror is right. What I see, like all of
the hideousness.
I see, yeah. Thought, anyone who sees good, anyone who thought, you mean like good stuff? You don't look in the mirror. Yeah, I think I the slogans are weird because it also feels like you're trying to be, you're sort of being indoctrinated, but like into like the woo, not even the, like a white rap band, like you're being, like you're being indoctrinated. Yes.
It has the stench of white all over it.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
You would never write those things down.
Like by the time the ink has dried, people who are actually on the cusp of being breaking new ground culturally have moved on to something else.
Oh my God. That's the thing. I mean, maybe it'll be like, you know, in 40 years, it'll be like seeing 23 Skidoo or, you know, like all those old 40s, you know, things that I, you know, from the old 40s movies, those little catchphrases. I can only think of that one. That's the only one I can think of. I don't know.
Groovy.
Groovy. Right, right, right.
Oh, yeah. I love watching a documentary from the 70s and everyone is overusing the word groovy.
Groovy, man.
Oh, it's so great.
It's such a
it's
scene.
It's so great.
They say everything's it's a scene, man. It's a scene. It's a happening. Yeah. Yeah, the 70s was, I think the 70s was the worst. For, I think the 70s,
oh,
I don't.
And Turkey, that was a good one.
You Turkey.
Yeah.
Oh my God. And yet I immediately thought of our president. I immediately thought of our president right now. The word turkey. I don't know why. Maybe he reminds me of a turkey, but that to me, I was like, yeah, he's that old maybe. I don't know. It just reminded me of the, Trump. He feels like a holiday ham to me. That's what I used to say when I was in the movies and somebody was overacting. I'll go, oh, man, you smell that pineapple? Somebody's cooking a holiday ham. And then my friend goes, that phrase is working overtime. And I go, now we're talking about the phrase. But, yeah, we're not paying attention.
We're getting
not
way too meta. Yeah. Give me a fear.
I am afraid that this is very real. I'm afraid that I will die before I finish getting better.
Greg has, had stomach cancer.
I had stomach cancer, which a gastrointestinal, non-Hodgkin's B-cell lymphoma, which I have,
Can't they shorten that? Don't they know how inconvenient that is?
You know, that's its problem, I think, is that they haven't got one of those cute nicknames.
Can't they, like, P. Diddy it or something?
I mean, well, it's a non-Hodgkin lymphoma. I think that's like, you know, and then B-cell is, you know, it's lymphoma. I have lymphoma, but then people go Hodgkin's or non-Hodgkin's. And then...
belly limp? Call it belly limp?
Belly limp?
Yeah. He's rocking belly limp.
Oh, man.
Speaking of dated terms.
I got some rocking. I am rocking some real B cell limp, a B lymph. I got some B lymph in my, but I don't have any more. So that is good. But fortunately for me and also for you, the listener, I have just had my prostate biopsied. So I'll find out in a week how that's going. I'm not really, I'm not afraid of, I never have been super afraid of dying. That is not my fear. My fear is that I won't be in the right place with the people that I love the most, because I'm recently, put myself back together. So I'm wanting.
Cause you went through some struggles with your sobriety as well.
Well, yeah, I was able to, get.
And you've been sober now.
For a year and a half. Yeah. But I during, cancer, little B cell, even though it's large.
Little
B.
That's what we call it.
Little B. I got myself, knocked up with OxyContin.
Is that addictive?
Well, they're saying they think it might be. It could be mental.
Because the pharmacies, the pharmaceutical companies, the big selling point was that it wasn't addictive. And why would they lie?
They wouldn't. Those are some of the most, and insurance companies, those are some of the most honorable people in the country. No, so yeah, it was a bummer. But I don't blame the cancer, and I also don't blame them. You know, I have the responsibility, and I wasn't working. I didn't have anyone in my life.
And you were an addict before that, so.
And But I knew better. That's the worst part, is I knew better, but I, some people might say I didn't want to live. But we don't hang out with those people. because they've been fucking, they're a bummer. But, so I, had that happen. And then I, woke up and went, well, this is a mess. It's a fine mess. And I would call that a midlife crisis that lasted from about 2011 to now. Mm-hmm. So it's been a journey.
What color Corvette did you choose?
Mine came in the shape of a Mini Cooper, so I didn't do a very good job. I picked a black Mini Cooper with a checkerboard roof. I mean, I didn't even get my midlife crisis right. I got a smaller car. Like, I'm very confident mm-hmm. with my, that just shows you the confidence I have in my penis. Yeah. I didn't need to get a bigger car.
I recommend a Harley because it's good for people a block away to be able to hear your midlife crisis.
I want people to know when I'm home and when I've left. Yeah. I mean, it's a really, like, I will say, it's a very real thing. I think the midlife crisis is sort of written off as a sitcom trope. But it's very real. And I think because men, especially old white men, are meant to tell us your problem, right? And I get it. Like, as an old white man, I understand. But I do feel, as an old white man, it is my responsibility to all men to let them know, hey, man, this shit is real. You have some sort of a hormonal change, or there is a sudden realization that life is only so long, and it's not the... See, the problem is we were just going back and forth about fears. Now I'm mm-hmm. giving a lecture.
No, it's okay. Finish your thought. Just let me know so I can wake up when you're done.
But then who will wake me? Because I'm sleep talking through this. I do think it's a very real thing. I think it really should be studied and regarded, but it's very hard to even put a man's study out there now with people just laughing it off. But if you're a dude and you are in your 40s and you are inexplicably sad, or you feel cheated for no reason because you shouldn't feel it. Like, you look at your life and it looks fine, but you feel cheated. It's a thing. It is a hormonal depression. There is the fact that even if you had red, you wish you'd gotten black or didn't know that you wanted purple. You'll convince yourself that you wanted things you didn't want. And you might want to take that to a therapist or a group or a friend soon, but don't let anyone minimalize it. The buying of a car is just like when somebody goes and buys a big car, for example, it's just an anchor. They're trying to buy an anchor. They're trying to hook themselves, not to their youth. They just want to, they're not enough. Mm-hmm. So their identity needs to be solidified, or they feel like they owe themselves something, or, every once in a while you can just afford a really cool car, but you're just too old for it. Buy some cool furniture, buy some paintings, buy some other thing. Cars really are like pants. You're like, those are too tight.
What's your fear? Okay. You started to say it. You're afraid that you're not going to survive.
I want to give my wife the version of me that I know exists that she has not gotten to have before I go. So I'm like, I want to be the guy. I want her to.
Aren't you that now, though?
No, because she's unsure. He's only been here for a short time.
I see.
But,
You want to be consistent enough in the guy
that
you've grown into.
Yeah.
That she can go, okay,
I'm
this
just
is.
I'm just trying to keep the distance between her meeting somebody new afterwards longer. I want to make it harder for that guy. That's all. I just want to make it harder for that guy.
Right. Because if she only got a day of good Greg,
She's not going to have that memory.
She's getting laid by somebody else at midnight of your funeral.
Can I tell you something? My mother was a fantastic person, but she was an alcoholic, and my bad memories of her are much more pronounced than my good ones. Yeah. And but we did have a great, when she was diagnosed with cancer, she got 4.5 years out of it, and those 4.5 years were great, and I love her, but I really have those old memories. Yeah. And I say more shitty things about her than I do good because they pop out. And I don't want that, and I understand it. And so I'm like, I don't get to control how people feel. Also, they're, you know, Amira's not me. But I just want an irrefutable, man, he really got great there, you know, mm-hmm. at the end. He was fucking, that last 4 years, whatever it is, whatever, mm-hmm. however long, maybe it's 50, but that last chunk was awesome.
Yeah.
You know, my girls will always love me because I'm their dad, and I, you know, they don't have the same relationship, and so they
and their standards are lower,
and they're much lower, and they're just stupid. But I was always able to get it together for them. Like they saw the least of my bad behavior, and I was always able to be, even in my messed upness, I was always able to pull it together to be around them. I used the same behavior that I would use for friends, but when you have a wife for some reason, or when I have a wife, I'm like, no, you're the person I can dump all this shit on, right? Because you're my buddy, and I can be this person. And you're like, no, that's not how that works either. No. So now I have a place to take that stuff. South Sapphire.
I like, by the way, too, that I tagged your existential existence fear with my shoes are a little cramped. That's how Paul supports his friend who's waiting to find out if he has prostate cancer.
Yeah.
By the way, when they check for that, do they use a used condom on a broom handle? Or is that just the guy I go to?
No. Well, you know what? I actually don't know because I didn't look. So they might, I don't know what they, that's very possible.
Okay.
I feel like they might have used a staple gun, stuck to a hockey stick, and then they pulled back and forth like they were trying to unlock a car with a coat hanger. That's what that felt like. All surprising, all awful.
Yes,
they said, I've had it
checked
down.
I've had it checked, but I've never had a biopsy from there.
The biopsies, yeah. Oh, you got to get a core sample. It's awful. It's awful. But I'd rather know than, you know,
Just the idea of somebody going inside your butthole to get a core sample.
From way further up than you know. And when they do it, it's like, it feels like a hole punch, right? They do like a ka-dung. And it feels like it jabs in and pulls out, right? It pulls.
Yeah.
You don't have, I can't verbally share the experience with you because we don't have a catalog for the words to describe a feeling you've never had before, because why would you? How often is anything even remotely like that?
It's just a series of grunts and whimpers.
But also, like, you see stars. Like, it's so shocking because it's in a place that
you've never felt pain before, right?
Yeah. I mean, it was really like, oof. Not good. Not good.
All right, my turn. I'm afraid that whatever discipline I have in my life right now is slowly ebbing away, and I'm going to be that person that when you drive by their house, it's like the 9-foot-tall weeds, and and you go, oh God, the neighbors must hate that guy. He must be so depressed or drunk.
Oh my God.
Every neighborhood has one of those.
We moved in across the street from those people when we lived over on Tahunga, the house you went to before. And the whole neighborhood was pretty nice to very nice.
Great, right? Neighborhood, yeah.
And then just a house from like it didn't look congruous. The windows were dirt taped up. and there were sheets, and it was like, it seemed like there was a cloud over it. Like, it just was. And everyone, I talked about the other podcast, the garage door would open at night, and a guy would go, "God damn it, John, no!" And then, "Why?" You know, like, just this weird fight about, you know, just that weird drunken fighting. And then, like, the rest of the neighborhood is like the pot. Yeah. And then this family that seemed like they were from another, out of space.
All right, what's your fear?
I'm afraid that, sort of what you're saying, I'm afraid of just having debilitated sensibilities, like losing touch with the world, with what the world's really about.
Becoming
like
more and more isolated and warped perspective on your place.
Stuck, you know, stuck in my ways, unwilling to accept new ideas, to have a resistance up and not understand that I have a resistance up.
Here's a really stupid one, but I'm afraid that one of my toes is getting an ingrown toenail. It's so stupid, but it's hunkering down.
Does it hurt?
It's hunkering down. Not yet, but every time I go to clip it, I have to peel it back, almost like a, you know, like when a dog is eating something that it's not supposed to be eating, and you grab it by the collar, and and it just keeps fighting you. It's like that, but digging into my skin.
That is so vivid. That's so vivid. Do you have you ever gone to like a doctor? There are people that look at that shit.
I don't believe in self-care.
Oh.
I don't believe in self-care.
That's going to save you a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've known some people who have been very successful at that. Yeah. I mean, they're no longer with us, but they went for it and they did it.
I have an elbow that has been bothering me for 3 years.
Good. Don't get that looked at.
Yeah.
I can't bring my right arm up over my ear, so I don't. I just throw sidearm now for the dogs. Yeah. I can still throw pretty far, but I can't. Because here's the thing. As you get older, you go, I basically know what the diagnosis is going to be, and I can't afford either the surgery or the time.
Yeah, I'm willing to give it up. I don't need my elbow. I don't need to bend my arm.
But here's the thing. Can I get around it? I have been for 3 years. Yeah. So, and that is the truth. Like, and part of it, because when you see people get things fixed and you're like, but you spent 7 months in a shoulder brace, you seem even more unhappy, and I still don't think you're going to pitch in the majors. So why don't you let that go, Gramps?
Give me a fear.
I'm a little bit afraid of the future for my kids. Just a big general. I really don't know what to tell them about what to do with their lives in terms of, like, when I was a kid, it seemed like there were some very clear routes to, maybe unclear, they may or may not have been right, but it seemed like there were real routes to success.
Right.
You got to go to college.
And now it's, for a lot of people,
you,
it's...
I don't know that you do. And I don't know that you need to go to and this is not a money thing, but I don't know that you need to go to a major university. Like, and I don't know, Daddy, should I be a lawyer or be an actress? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know that there aren't any.
She could pretend to be a lawyer and cover both.
I mean, shit. Yes. And then just do it online.
Yeah. Just an empty briefcase. Walk around. Just use the word herein.
She could just do tort reform as a YouTube channel. Like,
that'd go viral.
I mean, it's so funny. So this is what's so interesting. We
will be the judge of that.
Well, fair enough. See.
Yeah, your track record is questionable.
I was going to write, here's a fucking asterisk. See earlier comments. Yelp review his earlier comments. You will not want this one. We keep giving everything away for free.
Yeah.
So True and I are...
Digital content, you mean?
Everything. Education. I'm not kidding you. Like, I start thinking about what I remember from college, and I start thinking about, man, you know, you listened to 4 or 5 podcasts about, like, when Dunkirk came out, and I really wanted to see it, and I didn't know much about the Battle of Dunkirk. Mm-hmm. And so I listened to 3 podcasts, and then I went and read about it online. And it's more than I ever remembered from history, and it took me a little bit of time, and I got a, and not only that, but then I got a great, you know, there's still a background in World War II and all this other stuff, and it took me a day. And True was studying and reading about the Reformation, and there are these guys, they're called the Blog or Vlog Brothers, mm-hmm. and they have a thing called Crash Course where they explain history to you. And it's a YouTube thing, and it's an incredibly intelligent guy, and you go through the Reformation, and he does it pretty thoroughly in like 25 minutes, and there's little animated things, and he's opinionated, and it's mm-hmm. like a professorial thing. And I go, I know this isn't college. I know you don't have to write a paper and do deep mm-hmm. thinking and all that stuff, but you have picked the knowledge up very quickly, in which you are able to then make it, like, True has a better understanding of that now than I did.
Oh, yeah. And I think the way that you approach what it is that you're studying has everything to do with it. If you're learning about it because you want to expand your mind and you're genuinely interested in it, you're going to retain it way more than when you're reading it going, I wonder if this is going to be on the test.
Right. But we're asking people to read as though that is the final way of getting the information that, and that no longer is the truth.
Yes.
And insects, I'm afraid of also.
Yeah. Let's do loves.
Yeah.
I love when you encounter somebody who is more of an apologetic people pleaser than you are. Not you personally, but than I am. You know, the hunched shoulders, the apologizing for something that isn't even a slight or wrong. And you're like, oh man, that was it their mom or their dad that was an alcoholic?
Right. Oh, man. And yes. But I find it disquieting sometimes, because I think you can't, you know, I get those kind of people make me nervous, because I'm like, no, stop. Like,
yeah. You too, absorb their anxiety.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's hard. I'll tell you what I love. I love people that can shut other people up.
That's a good one.
I love watching somebody shut somebody up.
Yeah.
I love somebody who can, when a person, like in a meeting or someplace where people are, somebody's just filibustering and the other person just shuts them up. The bravery it takes. Mm-hmm. I can't shut up people. I'm very bad at that.
Yeah. I had to say one time to a friend, somebody from a support group, I said, we have been at, it was just him and I, and I said, we've been at coffee now for 45 minutes, and you have talked for 44 minutes and 30 seconds.
Wow. What did they say?
He paused, and he went, thank you for, he said, I'm sorry, thank you for pointing that out. Wow. And I said, honestly, it's a lot of times when you call me and I don't call you back, it's because it's not a conversation. And I said, I love you, you know, because I do love this guy, I care for him. But, that was growth to be able to say that.
I'm marveling at that.
Because I will get, if I can't escape or address that, people like that in my life, if I can't escape them or address them, it's a matter of time until I'm drunk.
Right. Oh, I thought you were going to say you just never call them back. Because that's what I do.
Every fifth call I pick up from him. I'm not kidding.
No, I get it. Yeah. I have that too. But I also picked those people. I called my sponsor the other day, and my buddy, I said to him, man, I read a guy's script for him. I gave him a note and he yelled at me. And he yelled at me in a way that is not cool, and I didn't know what to say because we've become friends, and why? And the bigger question is, I have put these people in my life a number of times, and I seek their approval, and but at the same time, I don't approve of, it's like, oh man, so complicated, and it's a pattern I'm dying to break. Yeah. Like, I am like, give me the keys, because I can't receive, or what is wrong with me that I can't stop that person from unloading on me? Yeah. Or they'll unload a problem on me, and then and then I'll start to, my problem is that I go into like, oh, here's what you should do. And they didn't ask a question. They're just unloading.
Yeah.
Because I forget, if you haven't asked a question, I don't have to give you an answer. Or why am I answering?
Was he unloading on you personally, or just unloading about their frustration?
He does both.
Mm-hmm.
And
but you didn't stick up for yourself and say, the way you're talking to me is not right?
No.
Not cool?
No.
Yeah.
Because I felt like I'd hurt his feelings with the note that I was trying to give. And the reason I hurt his feelings was I gave him a not a good note. I gave him a half-assed note, because what I really wanted to say would have hurt his feelings.
Yeah.
Right? But my note was very like...
there wasn't a diplomatic way to express the truth of the answer to the question that he had asked you?
No, because it's the thing you want to... It's one of those things where you say, I can tell you what it was. You've read this script before, where I was like, I just don't care about anybody. I don't.
You can't say that?
I couldn't at the time. I was like, I wanted to say because he'd already told me why I did care about them, and also that I didn't understand the genre. Before I'd answered the thing, like, it just was.
I don't like this person.
I do not like this person.
It sounds like they just wanted their ego stroke. Like, they just wanted to be complimented,
right? Or they agreed with.
But
yeah, and I put myself in those situations though. But and that's the thing that I'm already at myself going, well, this is what you get because you put yourself in the situation again.
I was. I've shared about this guy before on the podcast, but there's a guy who has a history of being really violent in our hockey league, and he got tossed out of one of the leagues. And he approached me after a game in the other league, which he's still playing in, and said essentially, would you tell the guy that runs the other league that I'm playing clean now? Because he didn't run any, take a run against anybody in the game that we had just played. And I said, and he knows that I had written a note to the league before saying this guy's unsafe. And he I said essentially, well, playing one game clean isn't, an indication that somebody has completely changed. And honestly, the problem isn't, and they had beat us like 10-1. I said, the problem is usually when you're losing that you get angry. And he wanted to know, name any, and I just listed off all the times that he had done. I said, you grabbed the back of my head one time and bounced it off the glass. Another time my head was down and you ran me full speed and almost broke my neck. Well, why didn't you tell me? He just kept turning it around on me.
Right.
And he just started, lecturing and talking about how, unfair this all is. I don't remember, but I stopped him and I said, I can't have a conversation about this because you're not interested in you're not hearing anything that I'm saying. And we'll have to agree to disagree. And I walked away and I felt really clean. He was pissed. He was pissed. And the next time I played him, we were just getting ready for a face off and I realized I'm pretty exhausted. I better have, a teammate come on for me. And so I called out for the other defenseman to come out. And as I skate by him, he goes, smart move. you know, like he was gonna, you know, and I, you know, I wanted to react to that, but I just went, you know what? He has his own reality. I have my own reality. And all I can do is stick up for myself, speak my truth diplomatically. And I felt really good about it because I didn't back down. I didn't let him, I didn't do anything that I didn't want to do.
No, no. And he didn't sink to his level. And that is a guy who is, sadly, he's fuming all the time. The voices in his head have him so upset and so angry and telling him, man, you have got to get yours. You are being fucked with, man.
Yeah.
That guy just fucked with you. Knock him down. Like, his whole reality is that guy never shuts up in his head. I'm not saying, like, right, wrong, or different.
And I've experienced moments of that, of being that guy.
That's the only reason.
Being that guy that sees red and thinks the only way I'm going to feel any kind of peace is if I show that motherfucker and I hurt him.
Because in his head, he's like, people think I'm small. They think I'm weak.
Yeah.
They think I'm fucking can be taken advantage of. And they fucking, you know, and they kick me out of this league because I'm fucking too, because I'm good at this. You know what I mean? Like, there's that whole thing, and it's a fucking horrible place to be. So I get it too. That's why I'm saying it's not hard to identify with a guy like that. So in your head, you go, what I respond to personally, I'm fascinated with anyone sets a boundary with me. You know, my wife will do it. My daughters have actually done it where they set a boundary. And then I'm like, oh, A, I'm in awe, you know, and B, respect, you know? And then I'm like, because one of my arguments to my wife all the time is like, well, I don't ever set a boundary. Yeah. With anyone. Fair enough. I like.
That is the
yeah. She shouldn't set a boundary because I don't ever set a boundary. Mm, that's not a good advertisement for being a person. Greg Barrett, I don't set boundaries. Available now. Completely available. No boundaries.
Give me a love.
Television. Right now, I'm having visceral relationships with, like, I'm having those I've had a couple moments in the last 6 months where a TV show has become like a friend, like a thing that I'm like grateful for, or feel like there's a hidden lesson in it for me, or something I'm getting from it that I'm like, I want to find the people that I finally understand that thing where I don't want to be friends with them, but I want to write a thank you letter to, like, Daniel Levy that created Schitt's Creek. Like, I want to write, you know, I want to J.J. Abrams or anyone on Lost. Like, I have that thing where I'm like, you won't even understand the experience I'm having. Cause it's only, you know,
I got to share that with, at a coffee shop. Daniel Day-Lewis was there one day, and I got to, tell him how much I love his work, and he was super gracious. And then I continued babbling like a 5-year-old with pigtails, that had a crush on him. It was,
I'm so at odds with that. You know, it's so funny because in my head, my sister used to just, every time we'd see somebody, anyone famous, she'd freak out. I go, you live here. I go, you were in management. But, and she would always make it too, I was like, you know, so I had a reaction about it, right? So I was like, oh, I'm not that, right? So when you have a sibling, you're like, well, see, I'm the opposite of that. I'm super cool. I don't even want to know them. But that's not true. And there are people that I see and I go, I don't know what this is. It doesn't even feel, I'm not me. I'm not the guy that it won't stop, but you touched me in a way, and I know this is momentary. We're not meant to be friends, and I want you to know this thing happened, and it was because of you. And I'm grateful or in awe and I used to be very, like, if people were nice to me about something I did, I'd be like, oh, okay, blah, 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 blah. Mm. And I realized you just go, just let it happen. Just let them say their thing.
Yeah.
Say, super nice to meet you. And, like, just stop. Let them, because I think they have to get it out.
Mm-hmm.
They want to get it out.
Yeah.
They really have, like, you know.
It's a way for them to be seen, too, because it's a way of saying, not only do I see you, but because what you did so deeply resonated with me, that there is a connection here, and the world really isn't as big and disjointed as it feels
right.
like it is.
Yeah, and it's hard to do that without scaring somebody, because it's a lot. It's more than you give people in a friendship normally, like right away.
That's why I do it with charades, which can be a little long.
Oh, you do?
Can be a little long.
You hold up one finger, go, hang on.
Hold up one finger, three syllables.
Three syllables, starts
yes.
with.
Yeah.
I really actually want to see that.
Yeah.
I want to see you approach celebrities with compliments, but you're going to make them work it out.
Yeah. And there's a timer.
Oh, it has to be a timer.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, I was standing at the curb with my guitar, and John Doe from X was just suddenly standing next to me with his guitar. Mm-hmm. And I was an out-of-body experience. I saw myself, and I was saying to myself, stop talking.
Because you were talking to him.
I don't even know what I was saying.
Yeah.
I don't even know what I was saying. I was telling him I'm certain things he already knows about himself. Shows he was certainly, like, I didn't even know I had that in me. I wasn't thinking about John Doe till he was there. And then all of a sudden I remembered every experience I had with X, and I just couldn't stop. And he was so nice about it.
Yeah.
And he was like, he said something about me, like, look at us coming back from playing gigs or something. He made me seem like, you know, but,
And then did you ask him to apologize for being in Roadhouse?
I did.
Did you demand a written apology?
I had him do it in charades.
It comes full circle.
I had to have him do it in charades.
Let's do one more love each.
Okay.
I love a perfectly intonated guitar where a chord sounds as sweet at the low end of the neck as it does at the high end of the neck. And you hear, like, you'll pick a note and you hear, like, all of the overtones of it.
Yes.
You hear it's like chimes.
Yes.
It's chimey.
Yes. And it's rare that you know, but there are, I have certain guitars where at one part of the neck, it's all good. And then then all of a sudden you're like, why?
Yeah.
Or but we were just in the right key.
I thought you loved me.
What happened to us? Guitar. I have to say, I have a genuine affection for my bicycle.
Which, like, you ride every day at 4 a.m.
Yeah.
You ride 20 miles.
Yeah. And it's a cruiser.
And that's been a big part of your recovery.
It was the beginning of my recovery. It was like my, I heard someone talk about this one day where they were like, I didn't want to do anything anyone suggested. I just thought I'll keep running. I'll just do that. And so that was my attempt at
self-care
and getting back.
Yeah.
That had to happen first, oddly enough. And then it was on a bike ride that I was able to give myself the rest of my sobriety to say, okay, now why don't we go see everybody?
Yeah.
We've ridden the bike for a while. We can ride a bike. We're not going to get better than, we can't get better here.
Yeah.
But now I have this relationship with it, because I think I told you this. I fought my instinct as an alcoholic is to, because alcohol, says, you get rid of alcohol, and it goes, oh, did you think I needed alcohol to kill you?
Right.
Right? We talked about that the other day.
Yeah.
I'll do it with gardening. I'll bury you in the yard. I'll make you do something till you hate it and it kills you. And I was like, I know all of my rituals with things, like with guitar. Well, then I have to get a better one, and then I'm not good enough, and then I got to play harder, and then this won't like that. So I just keep making the bicycle fail me. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I wouldn't do it. I'm like, I don't have to go on a long ride every day, and I don't have to go every day, and I don't always have to go at 4 a.m. And I can stop for a week, and it can still be a thing that I do if I pick it up, and I can go 4 miles, and I can go 45 miles. It's the same thing.
Wow.
And I want to let the bike tell me, I never make a plan. We just get on it, and I swear to God, the bike decides what, how long it wants to go. The bike is, I'll be like, I literally go, I don't think I can go long today. And then I go 2 hours. And some days I go, I'm going to fucking, seven, that's it, coming back. Like, I just, and I've been doing it for well over a year now. And I see the bike and I feel like it's an animal. I have two of them. I bought another one because the guy at the shop went, you keep coming back in here, you got to get a second bike. You just will. Every guy that rides a bike has at least two. Yes. And because you'll come in, this will have to be here for a week, you'll lose your mind.
Yeah.
But I haven't changed it since then. Genuine respect. I clean it every day. It's very strange.
Yeah. Those little things add up. Like, you can see my bed is made. I had made my bed for, since childhood, and about a year ago when my wife and I split and I moved out, I started making my bed, and it was just a good way to start my day, because it was like a way of doing something nice for myself and proof that I can have structure in my life. And when I come in to the bedroom and it's made, I don't know, it's just like a little sign that says, you can keep your life together.
I've told you I saw a very famous person. They were asked to...
Was it me?
It was just a little bit more famous, like a touch.
Okay.
Tough guy. And he was...
Sure it wasn't me?
It might have been you.
Okay. Because you're hitting all the buttons.
That's it.
Yeah.
I mean, very similar. If it wasn't you, it was a guy. It was a guy like you. Yes. A guy who wanted to be like you.
Right. Because you hadn't said chiseled yet.
Chiseled. Yeah.
It was me.
It was you. It was ripped.
Yes.
He was asked to share, what's the one corny thing that, if you had to attribute a corny phrase in your life that keeps you together. And he said, I hate it. It's a messy bed, messy head. And I thought, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. That was my response. And same thing. I went home and I was like, my bed was a mess. My room was a mess. And and it starts there. It's just like my buddy said, and that's it. And it's the same thing. Yeah.
And it's not to impress anybody else. It's just a way of saying, I have respect for my life.
Yes, and my sleep is a practice, and I spend my life here. And if you imbue it, that's the thing. When we have too much stuff, it's hard to do. But if you really love your bed, if you really, I always say to people, you want to get sober? Floss. And my buddy goes, better than that, floss one tooth. You'll end up doing all of them.
I like that.
And there really is those little things where you're like, man, everything matters. The space between my teeth, my skin, all of that, And then you start to realize yeah, man, make the bed.
Yeah.
Have 3 pair of shoes instead of 15, be able to see all your clothes. That's a thing somebody told me, be able to see all of them. Anything you see you don't like, get rid of it. Because then the things you have are special and they matter. And I know that sounds weird, but I have t-shirts that I'm like, no, that's not that one. Put it here. That's mine. I got it. I'll fold it. I got to fold that because it's part of the team.
Greg Barron, also want to plug you're putting a new podcast together. I don't know how widely available it will be when this airs, but right now it's being called PodCan.
Well, PodCan is the network, and it's available. That's the PodCan Productions or whatever. That's the label.
Oh, okay.
And I'm doing a podcast with my wife there, and that podcast is called "You're Living All Over Me." I'm doing a podcast with my friend Kay Hanley, who's the lead singer of Letters to Cleo, and it's about rock documentaries, and it's called Take Your Doc Out and Rock. No, it's called Rock Out with Your Doc Out. I always get the name wrong. And then I'm doing, there's a guy, we do a podcast. His name's Paul Gilmartin.
Doesn't ring a bell.
I know.
Wait, Chiseled?
Yes.
Tough?
Very tough.
Always has a bed that's made?
Makes his bed every day.
That's me.
Oh, fuck, that guy is awesome.
Do we have a name for...
we haven't figured it out yet. Okay. We don't.
But I'll put a link so people can listen to it.
Put a link.
Is there a name for the episode where we talk about pillowcases?
I think I called it... Bear Gill Mountain's Pillow Sweat Reducer.
I don't know if I've ever laughed as much as I did in that hour with you.
Oh my God, that was a good hour.
Yeah, that was fun. Yeah,
we talk about, that was my podcast reaction to your podcast, where I was like, you're coming over.
Yes.
And we are talking about horse shit. You're going to clear your head with, it's going to be foul and
inappropriate, gross, and graphic, and hopefully funny.
Yeah, and then we'll end up talking about something serious because we're both serious men. But and it's good, and people like it.
Yeah,
because it's straight up stupid.
Yeah,
Bear Gill Mountains. I keep changing it every time. Gilly Bear Mountains, Pillow Sweat Reducing Cream. We sell a series of creams. Paul and I do. There's salves and lotions. That's what it is. It's a thing for you and I to sell our lotions.
Yeah, to yellow your pillowcase. Yeah, a lot of people can't get it that pure yellow.
No, they can't. They want it. And you wonder, how do those stains come out of my head? Well, listen to the podcast. We're going to teach you not only how, but you can pre-stain.
Yes.
Right? You can add a color if you want. We're going to show you. We've got colors that you can buy from us.
You will have people asking you, how did your pillow get hepatitis?
That's right. And how many pillow cases do you go through a month? And we're going to teach you all the different tricks that you can, how to make your nap really smell. You know, if you think your nap stinks now, wait till you get us to teach you how to really stink up a nap. What'd you say? You like to nap. You've done some naps where it looks like a crime scene. I can't remember. You'll have to go to the podcast, but it was vivid.
Yeah.
We get into that stuff. Sloth, avarice. Yeah. We go into all the sins.
Yeah.
Right?
I think so.
Yeah.
It was a blur. It was a blur.
Gluttony.
You might be thinking of the Bible.
Oh my God. Wait, which one did we do?
We did the New Testament.
Oh, okay. Oh, I love that one.
Yeah.
That one's good.
Greg Barrett,
our Lutheran fans.
I love you, buddy.
Thanks. I love you too,
Thanks for coming on.
What a special, special man. And by special, I mean stupid. why was I afraid to be vulnerable right there? We're just coming out of an interview where we get vulnerable and we talk about our feelings, we express our love for each other, and then I go and fuck it up. Oh, I didn't fuck it up, did I? I don't think I fucked it up. In my mind, I'm either a monster or I'm a sap. I'm never anything in between. This episode will soon be transcribed and available on our website. Many thanks to Accurate Secretarial for donating their time and helping out the show. And any of the links that you've heard mentioned on the podcast will be on our website underneath show notes. But the show ain't over. For those of you that are new to the podcast, I've got some anonymous surveys to read, and we're not going to do any shame and secret surveys. I wanted to keep this one kind of on the light side. But next week's guest is the Queen of Darkness. Caitlin Doughty is going to be the guest. And I think I'll even make the surveys dark for that one. What a great interview that was with her. I know she's got a big following. She's an author, and if her name doesn't ring a bell, she's an author, and she is a mortician, and great sense of humor. And yeah, definitely check that one out. Before I get to the surveys, I want to remind you guys that there is a couple of different ways to support the podcast if you feel so inclined. You know, we do sometimes have advertisers on the show, but they kind of come and go, and it's not enough to support the show, not nearly enough. We need monthly donors, and Patreon is a great way to become a monthly donor. I'll put the link on our website, and you can sign up for as little as a dollar a month, and every little bit counts. You can support us by giving a one-time donation through PayPal. Oh, and the nice thing about if you become a monthly donor through Patreon is that I can give you free rewards, bonus content, you know, silly videos, stuff like that. You can also support us by using our link for Amazon, and then if you buy something, Amazon will give us a couple of bucks, and it doesn't make the price of what you're buying any more expensive. You can support us non-financially by going to iTunes, giving us a good rating, writing something nice about the show, and spreading the word through social media about the podcast. That definitely helps a lot. Let's get to the surveys. This is an awfulsome moment, and for those of you that aren't familiar with the term, it's something that was awful at the time, but looking back on it, there's something kind of so fucked up that it makes you laugh, or there was something kind of sweet in it. I don't know why I emphasized the word sweet so hard. That was, was weird. This is an awfulsome moment filled out by Swedish Fish, and she writes, "Things were extremely tense between my mother and I for some time, and she drove 500 miles to my house to, quote, straighten this out, as it couldn't continue, unquote. I was in my 30s and had never heard her say the words, 'I love you,' not once. It wasn't just the words that I was starving for, it was the affection and knowing I was lovable. I confessed to my mother that I never felt loved by her. She snapped at me, 'Well, you were wrong. I love all my children.' When I confided in my friend burst out laughing at the absurdity of the situation. I actually like to tell people they're sexy as I push them out of a moving car. I think it's good to keep people off balance." This is a happy moment filled out by Kirsty, and she writes, "For the past few weeks, I've been waking up feeling extremely anxious, feeling like I'm trapped in my head. I forced myself to go walk in the garden, the gardens near my flat, and the beauty was so simple, yet it completely stilled my mind. The autumn colors of the leaves changing, going through the big piles of leaves of the grass like I used to, or the grass like I used to as a child, petting dogs, feeling the breeze whip through my hair. I felt alive, I felt safe, and I felt like myself." Thank you for that. You know, the thing I love about a lot of the happy moments that you guys fill out, and it's probably why I read them so often, are the really subtle ones where it's just somebody being present. And 90% of having a good life is being present for it. Yet it's so hard. It is so hard. This is a struggle in a sentence filled out by let me see what I can do for you. It's all letters run together is one thing. So that was a little hard to decipher. And she writes about her anxiety. "I overanalyze situations because I'm scared of what will happen if I'm not prepared for it." Oh my God, do I relate to that one. About her love addiction. "I want to know everyone loves and cares for me, but I'm so scared to disappoint, so I just hide." I swear to God, you must be living inside my brain right now. About her sex addiction. "Sex feels so good, so let's have more." and living with an abuser. My husband is verbally abusive and I don't believe he realizes it. He makes me feel like I can't do anything right, but I'm so messed up in the head. I don't know if I'm just overreacting. And one of the reasons that I wanted to read this is I have never met a single person that has said such and such is abusive and they were making it up or they were making too much out of nothing. I've never met. I have the feeling that you are probably, your instinct is right. And I think it'd be good to go to counseling. It'd be nice to have somebody there who is, an objective, mediator. And one of the things that I think is really important is if you're in a marriage and one person wants to go to counseling and the other person doesn't, I think it's extremely healthy for the person that wants to go to counseling to say, well, then I want out of this marriage if you're not willing to work on it. Because a lot of times the person that doesn't want to go to counseling is the person who deep down knows that they are being controlling and or abusive, and they have the feeling they're going to get called on their shit. Or they may just not believe in therapy, but a willingness to work on stuff is a, to me, it's the foundation of a healthy relationship. All right, this is an awfulsome moment filled out by Lavender. And she writes, I was coming out of the shower, wrapped in a towel and ready to head upstairs. My mom came up to me and asked me for a hug. I gave her one, naked, except for the towel wrapped around my body. All of a sudden, she grabbed my hips and ass. I yelped, pushing her away, and asked her if she could just, quote, be normal for once. She gave me a long, lingering, wet kiss on the side of my neck as I stood there half naked. Wow. Oh, man, that anybody who relates to that, you are not alone. You are not alone in that at all. And it is a project that I am working on right now is interviewing people who have experienced mothers like that. And email me if you are interested in knowing more about that. This is a happy moment filled out by J-O-R-J-A, Yoria, Joria. Earlier this week, my fiance and I were rolling around in bed, joking around and laughing and kissing. We were so happy. Then we both said basically the same thought at the same time. We are acting just like an early scene in a movie where life is fantastic and then one of us gets violently murdered the next day. That was 3 days ago and we're both still alive. This is an awfulsome moment filled out by Benandi. And he writes, I'm in the middle of trying to establish care with a psychiatrist slash therapist, and I've been working hard at it for the past few weeks, calling my insurance, calling doctors, finding out my campus only does 4 sessions before referring off campus, being told doctors aren't taking new patients, don't prescribe the medication I need, missing calls, missing appointments, and all of that mess that is the current state of mental health care in the U.S. In the middle of a phone call to my campus counseling and mental health center, after I'm put on hold, what do I hear? The song Crazy by Gnarls Barkley. I love moments like that when the universe just kind of gives you a hug and is like, nah, we haven't forgotten. We haven't forgotten you. This is an awfulsome moment filled out by Staying Alive. And she writes, a year ago tomorrow, I found my partner after he had committed suicide. Right now, I'm sitting in a park watching the sunset, contemplating our relationship in my life and my life since he died. He got PTSD a year and a half before it killed him, and his mental illness resulted in pretty serious physical illness. During this time, his unhealthy interpersonal tendencies also festered into full-blown abuse. I did everything I could for him, but in the end, I chose myself, and I'm damn proud I did. I've spent the last year putting my life back together. I went to PTSD therapy and realized that his behavior was abusive and that I could have died. I forgave myself and stopped blaming myself for it. For most of it, it's a work in progress. So I'm sitting here marveling and mourning, and I glance at the church across the park and see a sign that says, "Stay Alive," in all caps. It was an anti-texting and driving sign, but it made me start laughing. I did stay alive, though some god-awful terrible time, through some god-awful terrible times and experiences, and I'm going to keep staying alive. It's good advice. Thank you for that. I also love the moments you guys fill out that are bittersweet, because so much of life is just weird combination of bittersweet. This was filled out by Sabrina, who is French, and apologized for her spelling at the top, but your spelling's great. And this is a happy moment. She lists a couple of them, and she writes, "When being outside is not just go from point A to point B as fast as possible without crying, you sicko." It's hard to explain. I don't know what it is about that time of the year in the fall. There's a softness to it and heightened senses at the same time. The scent of fresh fallen leaves and lavender bushes. I love it. Just fucking love it. I'm happy when reflections are not torture anymore. That's a really profound one. I love when I'm alone after dark walking in the middle of the road, and yet there's no more fears, no more guilt, no more pains. And I love when finally there is empathy. Thank you for that. And then finally, this is a happy moment filled out by a listener who calls herself Dark and Twisty. And she writes, "I've struggled with depression, anxiety, and self-harm for as long as I can remember. High school was extremely hard for me, as I couldn't walk the hallways without having a panic attack. Two suicide attempts in high school prompted my steps towards recovery. Inpatient hospitalization and years of therapy have provided me with a toolbox for dealing with my mental illness, but still, it is my decision whether or not I utilize those tools, and too often I don't want to. A couple of months ago, however, I discovered that going for runs was a great way to combat my darkness." By the way, not to be mistaken for having the runs. Two completely, completely different activities. That might either be funny or the worst joke ever. "My anxiety acts as a wheel in my head that is always turning a million miles a minute, but when I run, that wheel stops. My mind becomes occupied, and it feels though I am no longer stuck in a bleak and scary cave. Plus, after my runs, I feel high on adrenaline and proud that I did what I know is healthiest for me. However, it's always a huge struggle for me to build up the motivation, sometimes ruled by guilt, that allows me to run. There have been many times that I have laid in bed feeling defeated and horrible about myself as I cancel the run I have planned for that day and let my depression win. My happy moment day began with me feeling very heavy as I sunk further and further into my literal bed of despair. As I almost resigned to laying around ruminating for the rest of the day, something in me compelled me to put on my sneakers and running clothes." By the way, if you're going to ruminate, I recommend buying a ruminating sweatsuit. They actually have a ruminating marathon. At the start of it, a guy fires a starter's pistol and asks, "Why does everybody abandon you?" Continuing, "A few days before, my friend had invited me to run with her across the large 4-kilometer bridge in our city, but unfortunately I had to work so I couldn't join her. This bridge has been on my mind since that day. I decided that I would cross it. So I get to the bridge, and keep in mind, I am not at all a strong runner. Starting up the hill, watching the cars go by, it felt like an impossible feat, and I tossed around the possibility of calling a taxi to take me home. Instead, I challenged my self-doubt. I put on my headphones and pushed my body until I had gotten to the midway point, the tallest point over the water, where I stopped to catch my breath and admire the view. Suddenly, Looking out across my beautiful city, I was overcome with emotion. Then it really hit me. I always thought that if I were standing at the top of a bridge, my intention would be to jump over the edge rather than run across. Tears welled in my eyes as I realized that I felt no urge to die. For the first time since I began cutting my wrists at 11 years old, I did not want to die. I flash back to high school, sobbing on the couch, paralyzed with depression, thinking I would never make it past 17. And then back to the present. There I was, 21 years old, a college graduate, 6 years in recovery for self-harm, and running across a fucking bridge. As I sprinted down the bridge and back with tears in my eyes and a shit-eating grin on my face, I felt as though I had run a marathon that I was the first and only person to finish. Despite people of all ages passing by with baby carriages or holding hands with a loved one going on about their daily routine, I threw my hands into the air as I reached the bottom, admiring my own strength and perseverance. This was not just crossing a bridge. This was acknowledging that I had gained a will to live in the process of healing. On the way home, I called my mom to tell her the huge step I had made. We cried on the phone together, and she told me how proud of me she was. This doesn't mean that I don't still have tough days or that I never think about jumping, but it means that I realize I have the capacity to love and appreciate my life. Arguably, the most important piece of advice I've gotten regarding mental health is to treat yourself with kindness and gentleness that you would if you were a child. You would not tell a child they are worthless and that they can't do it. You'd encourage them to try and give them room to grow. I have learned that we are often our biggest enemies, so if we can be more gentle in our own heads, we can find the strength to cross any bridge we come to. That was so beautiful. So beautiful. That's another love that I have, is when one of you submits a survey that is so clearly the survey to end the show on. And there's no debate in my mind. Do I read this last one or that? As soon as I read that one, I was like, oh, we got a survey to go out on. Thank you to my guest, Greg, to all the people that filled out the surveys, the monthly donors. And if you're out there and you're feeling stuck, you are not alone. It's just a lie that your brain is telling you. There is help all around you. There's also other sick people around you who can't be of help to you. But that doesn't mean that there isn't help. You just have to keep looking, and you will find it. And you can get to that point where you don't feel alone. And it's a beautiful place to be. And I get to experience it almost every day. And I never knew it was there, but it is there. And thanks for listening.
Everybody I know is bizarrely beautifully
everybody
fucked up
I know
in some weird way.
Bizarrely beautifully
everybody
fucked up
I
in some weird way.
Bizarrely beautifully
everybody
fucked up in some weird way.
Bizarrely.